maybe sometimes it's good as well to just, you know, chill, relax, always.
Gotta dream more.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast, World Cup. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Sarah DeFellin.
Hello.
Guys, are you chill? Jan, are you chill?
Well, I wasn't, but then I was instructed to do so by Bald FIFA Guy. So now I'm fairly chill, yeah.
Yeah. Terry, are you chill?
I'm definitely chill. I have been told that I should chill, and so I did.
Yeah.
And I am.
Okay, yeah. Good. Then we're all chill, aren't we? Which is good, because, yeah, otherwise we'd get all flustered, and then we wouldn't know what to talk about for the next half hour or so, would we? But, hey, we do know, because the World Cup has actually started now. Yes, yeah, so this is Monday evening. We are talking to you while Cape Verde and Spain are just about kicking off their second half. It was a great first half, great back-to-the-wall display by Cape Verde, and winning at 0-0. By the time we come out, it will be completely different, I'm sure. But for now, we can bask in the glory that is that wonderful 0-0 first half. So that's the stage where we are right now. So what we're going to do this week, we're going to talk about the opening games, what sort of flavour, what the smell of this World Cup is about. And we'll be looking at the games, the coverage in the UK and how that's gone, and what we've liked and what we haven't liked so far. So, Jan, I'll start with you. Did you bother tuning in for any of the opening ceremonies?
No, I didn't.
Plenty of them, weren't there?
Yeah. Well, for the opening game in Mexico, the opening ceremony was on for quite some time, so I just came in at the end where the representative of each country marched out with a flag, formed a circle, and then the game started. So I quite liked that. So I didn't, there was no singers or anything like that, or certainly on my telly when it was happening. So I don't really put much by opening ceremonies for any sport. Maybe some people enjoy them, but I'm not one of them.
See, Jan just took Bald FIFA Guy's instructions a bit too literally and just chilled out completely, isn't he?
Yeah, he was too chill there.
He was too chill.
Far too chill.
You weren't FIFA compliant chill there, I don't think, Jan. How about you, Terry? Are you a bit concerned that there isn't a crazy ball in this tournament, or has the opening just sort of seeped into a normal World Cup for you, albeit stupidly long?
I know they're a UEFA innovation, but I would have loved FIFA to have embraced the whole let's get a remote control car out to take the ball out, which I genuinely think is one of the best things to happen in modern football since the back path rule. And that's a shame. I did catch a bit of Bublé for the Canadian one. Just a bit of Bublé. Mrs. Terry is partial to a bit of Bublé. And for that matter, also, as it happens, I then had the novelty of Alanis Morissette belting out the Canadian national anthem. And my goodness, didn't she? She put everything into that one, and fair play to her, proud Canadian like that. And I was that day years old when I realised that Alanis Morissette was in fact Canadian. So it was a big school day for me on what was an otherwise unremarkable game of football.
Ah, yeah, I wonder actually if the remote control car, they have missed out a trick here, because you could actually have something themed, couldn't you, for whatever country you're in. Have like a remote control moose for Canada.
Camper vans with liveried in the colours of the host nation. And then there's the opportunity for camper van provider to provide some sponsorship. Because, you know, camper vans, I think, are probably a bit of a kind of theme for such a large World Cup.
It is a large World Cup. And I think it's only really coming home now about how large it actually is.
It's massive.
It is massive. It's as big as jungle, listeners. That's how big this World Cup is. It is jungle size.
I never thought I'd see the day, Graham, that you'd say that.
Well, it is true. I mean, there is twice as many games at this World Cup as there were at USA 94. Twice the number of games. So it's 104. 40 more than there were at Qatar. It's phenomenal. I did some numbers today. Before Germany play again on Saturday, Germany played last night, they played Curaçao and stuffed them 7-1. Before they play again, we'll have already played more games than they played in the 1966 World Cup. Now, before England play their third game, we'll have played more games than they played in Qatar. So we will still be in the group stage when we've played all the numbers, the same number of games as they played in Qatar for the last World Cup. And then we've got an extra round of knockouts to go for as well. So, yeah, it is going to be crazy. We've got four games a day coming up over the next week. Goes to six games a day on the last round of the group stage as well. So, yeah, absolutely mad, full of football. Too much football, Terry? Or do you like the fact that a lot of the games are on in the middle of the night, so you actually don't get to see quite a few of them? You just get to watch a little, lot of them in highlights form.
I think we have established it's too many games. In fairness, I mean, when we come out the other end of the World Cup, then we'll truly know whether or not there were too many games. Because if we're like going out there saying, oh, actually, that was amazing, let's expand it even more, let's have 64 teams, then, you know, maybe we'll know all this time FIFA guy was actually right to expand it to 48. But I think it is great that so many of us have become nostalgic for 32 teams, when in fact I distinctly remember that when they expanded it to 32 teams, many people were really unhappy that it had been expanded to 32 teams, when in fact actually that was really good because it's an excellent format. I am grateful for the fact that there are a couple of games that I miss, but then I wake up in the morning and go, oh man, that looked like a really, really good game. I'm sorry I missed it. You can get extended highlights on BBC and ITV's YouTube channel, but on the iPlayer, they're only doing these 10-minute highlights packages, which is fine, I guess. It's just, I don't know, sometimes you want to get into the meat of a game, so an extended highlights package would be quite cool. I'm starting to cultivate a habit of waking up in the morning and reaching for my tablet and watching some videos, which now sounds a little bit sordid, actually, thinking about it. Yeah, okay, I'll stop there.
Yes, yeah, I'm quite enjoying the... I think they're about 7.5 minutes, the videos that are on the iPlayer anyway. And they give you a flavour of it. Now, of course, there are some games where there's loads of goals, like in the Tunisia-Sweden match. More on that later. And then there's one where you obviously think, well... actually, there wasn't a lot of action in this game as well. Jan, I'm thinking about Scotland's game against Haiti, which a great result for Scotland, starting off the tournament with a win. That's very rare for Scotland. So, brilliant start for them. But those 7.5 minutes highlights had the Scottish national anthem, and they had a lot of the post-match celebrations included in that. So, that gives you an idea of the, how they squeezed the rest of the action in the middle, doesn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely does. I mean, I was about to say, actually, before you came to me, the highlight of that game was the Scotland fans singing Flower of Scotland. Because the, you know, John McGinn, who I thought was pretty good, he was pretty good leading up to the goal, but his goal, I mean, it just bumbled in, didn't it, really? It wasn't a beautiful strike. But, you know, a win's a win, and yeah, well done, Scotland. But just something on the side, that game is where I kind of thought that the size of the tournament was really coming home to me, because I was like, okay, Scotland scraped past Haiti, but Haiti have got to play Brazil. And I mean, what are Brazil going to do to Haiti? I mean, that's just going to be, it's going to be awful. Just like it was awful watching Curaçao being torn apart by Germany yesterday. There are teams that shouldn't be at this World Cup, and they're there because it's been expanded. So it wasn't really a sporting fixture. Just, sorry, I jumped onto the Germany game, so I'll continue. It wasn't really a sporting fixture. It was more like watching a bullfight. I think we're probably going to see a few more games where you see absolute hammerings dished out.
Well, maybe, maybe not. Well, we did see a hammering in Tunisia versus Sweden. Well, I watched it in the highlights because it was on in the middle of the night. And actually, it's led to the first casualty of the tournament, hasn't it, Terry? Sabri Lamouchi has been given his marching orders after just 24 hours in the tournament. That's madness, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it is. It's it's not understandable, actually. It really it is. I mean, if you had concerns about your coach before going into the game, then, you know, really, you should have got rid of him beforehand and made a decision then. I mean, I understand that, yeah, obviously they lost 5-0 to Belgium pre-season, and I think took a lot of stick for it. I also appreciate that they, you know, they're passionate about their football in Tunisia, but it just feels really unprofessional to make a decision like that, you know, in the midst of the tournament when the tournament's already begun. So I can't say that I think that that is going to be a good idea unless, I don't know, unless there's kind of Netflix documentary sort of like potential about it. And in fact, you know, it was, maybe there was a dressing room result. Maybe the players just like, this guy, get this guy out. We've had enough of him. I'm not doing anything until this guy's been fired. It could be a question of player power, and the Federation just felt compelled to do so. So his replacement is currently managing an existing club.
Yeah, Club African. It's Monde Cabaya.
Monde Cabaya, which we've probably mangled the pronunciation of that. But anyway, that's the best we can do, given that we had no idea who this guy was half an hour ago.
Well, he was previously manager of Tunisia 4 years ago.
Right, okay.
But he left after his contract expired, and now he apparently is there on an interim basis for the rest of the tournament, which I think will be two games.
He's on holiday, isn't he? In the States with his family, and they've said, look, can you do us a favour?
I reckon he was just basically G-Neving for Tunisian TV out there. And they've just said, right, okay, come on, in you come.
He was scandalising himself about VAR on Tunisian TV, and then like, actually, can you do us a favour, mate?
Yeah, Tunisia are in the same group as Japan and Netherlands. It was always going to be a tough group, Jan. That group is tough by any stretch. And Japan, Netherlands fought through a fantastic draw just last night. Yeah, Netherlands taking the lead twice in that game. So this guy really, I mean, he's got a free hit here, really, because there's no chance that they're going to get any change, it looks like anyway, out of Japan or Netherlands.
I'd be very surprised if that happened. Just to go back to the sacking, seems a really bizarre thing to do now. So something strange must have happened there. The massive hiding they got from Sweden aside. But yeah, they're not going to get anything out. Japan, I thought, were brilliant. I always forget how strong the Japanese side can be. And they were great. I thought the Netherlands were pretty good as well, as you always expect them to be. So I can't see Tunisia getting anything out of those two other than right hammerings.
Yeah. Terry, a great goal from Kamada there in the Japan game. Clinical header.
He clearly knew exactly what he was doing. Clearly. There are definite shades of first season Kamada at Crystal Palace about that goal. It's like, oh, how did that happen? Usually it's associated with people going, oh my God, what's Kamada done this time? But for regular Palace fans won't know this, but there are two shades of Daichi Kamada. There is first season Kamada, and then there is second season Kamada. And second season Kamada is the one that we like. But yeah, good for him. And a Crystal Palace player scoring in the World Cup. What a time to be alive, guys. And an opportunity to jump in on more horrific Palace bias. It's my mission to mention Crystal Palace every time we do a podcast during the World Cup.
Yes.
Which may get trickier as the tournament progresses.
Luckily, going back to our last week's prediction show, which you should listen to, listeners, because we are almost guaranteed to be 95% correct on this, where we told you which teams weren't going to win. But going on the order, we had Japan as the one that was going to stick around in the tournament longest. Netherlands next, then Sweden and Tunisia. I think that's a safe bet. I don't think you could read too much, can you, Terry, into that 5-1 win against Tunisia. Tunisia are obviously a team with problems.
Clearly. It's possible people may have been a bit unkind about Sweden because, yes, they did have a terrible qualifying until they didn't.
Yeah.
And they turned it around when Brian Potter turns up. And obviously Brian's done an amazing job while he's been there, and he's got them through the playoffs in there. And I'm pretty certain he'll be feeling pretty pleased with himself and feeling vindicated right now, and rightly so. And also, I mean, there's a thing, it feels like there was a bit of a confluence of circumstances because Jokeres has obviously won a league title, famously won a league title. We may have heard about it. Arsenal apparently won the league. I mean, you know, hardly ever discussed. I mean, you know, but of all of the players, and particularly the new signings, I think Jokeres was less kindly thought of through a lot of the season. And I think it's probably fair to say that he maybe took a little bit longer to settle in. But obviously he's arrived at the World Cup and gone, ha-ha, well, I mean, I know these guys. These guys are my mates, and this is my country, and this is the World Cup. Similarly, Alexander Isak, who's had a pretty rotten season, to be fair. Now, it does look like those two, if there are any club issues, they could be working them out on this group. And so that is something to think about, because they are two dangerous strikers. And hats off to Brian for playing both of them at the same time. Other coaches would have only played one, to be fair. An England coach, I say an England coach, not an England coach, because obviously Brian is famously English, would have probably only played one of those two guys. But like Brian's gone, no. We'll have two of them and we'll play them both and then we'll do it that way and hope for the best. Good on him.
Yes, yes. Smorgasbord. Smorgasbord. It's a future. I've tasted it. Yes, Gyökeres, he's certainly struggled to get 21 goals this season for Arsenal, didn't he?
But there's been people, apparently he's rubbish.
Oh, no, well, they...
Despite
the 21 goals. Yeah, I think what it is that if you've gone out and said that, what the hell are Arsenal doing spending this money on this guy who used to play for Coventry? And then he actually does score. You have to say, I'm not listening. No, he's rubbish. And I think people look at him and he's a big, broad-shouldered guy and he looks like a classic number nine. And I don't think he is. I think he's an inside forward. I think he plays an old-fashioned number 10, not the loose playmaking number 10, the one that just runs in the channel and the one that is getting knockdowns from your big number nine. I think that's the type of player he actually is. But I think it's great that he's playing. And I think he does make a good partnership there with Isak. I had to laugh because Andrew Beasley, obviously a Liverpool fan, did point out that Isak had 5 goal contributions in the whole season for Liverpool and 2 in the game. And I think 2 or 3 actually in the game for Sweden. I'm not sure they will have such an easy time for the rest of this tournament, but they've got that win. And yeah, with 8 of the third place teams going through, that may be enough. Don't know.
With that goal difference as well.
That goal difference is certainly going to help. And yeah, I think the job for the new manager may well just be damage limitation, I think. But that's our take on Group F. Group F looks fascinating and it's difficult, isn't it, really? Because when you've got this number, when there's 3 teams going through, in the last World Cup, this would have been really, really tense now with Japan and Netherlands sharing points and now Sweden going on in there. And if it was top 2 only going through, then you'd sort of think, well, one of those is going to go out. But now, all 3 look likely to go through, so maybe not so great, is it, Jan?
No, not so great at all. Yeah, I mean, it just keeps coming back to the size of the competition for me.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, the fact that we've got another round after the groups are all finished up is a bit like it's got kind of autumnal Champions League feel about it sometimes.
You can't really do anything about that extra knockout round, but I think to get that excitement back in of only 2 teams going up, what you do, if you expand it to 64, 16 groups, then we have only 2 teams going up from each group, and then it goes back to that real jeopardy in the group stage. Terry, I think I'm onto something here, yeah?
You are definitely onto something. You are definitely onto something here, yeah. Yeah, I can totally see that happening. They should expand it to 64 World Cup. I mean, good luck finding a host for that. It will probably need 3 or 4 countries to co-host it. But,
well, yeah. I think now the precedent has been set. We now have host continents, don't we? So it's that's how we're looking at things now. And I think we had a host continent for the 2020 Euros, didn't we? So I think it's time to expand, isn't it, really? It's time to open it up. I mean, maybe that is the way you do a 64-team tournament. You have, like, well, how many hosts did we have for Euro 2020? Was it...
I can't remember.
It was something like that, wasn't it?
It was a lot. And, yeah, the whole idea... In fact, that may have been reduced somewhat because, of course...
COVID, I think
initially it had actually been... The plan would be there would be more hosts.
Yeah.
Because it was a centenary year, I want to say, or something like that. It was some kind of anniversary. And so as a consequence, they said, well, let's make it Europe-wide, which just an excuse. I remember being in favour of it. I mean, in all seriousness, if we are going to go down this ludicrously long World Cup tournament line, then we should go the whole hog, get 64 teams in, because then we will have a balanced tournament.
Yeah, see, it just makes sense. This is what happens when you chill out. It's great, isn't it?
It is. It is. When you chill about certain things, just stay chilled in the same way. I mean, we're all chilled about hydration breaks now, aren't we? So what's the problem?
Well, we're 20 minutes in now, so yeah, why not? Let's have a hydration break.
Should we have a hydration
break?
Yeah,
great. Let's kick back.
Cool. I'll just take the opportunity during this hydration break to point out that my new novella, A Killing at Southwall FC, is available on Kindle for the price of £1.99. And I'll just close this just in time for kickoff.
Oh, no, you won't. Look, you're already playing.
Oh, no. Sorry about that. That won't happen again.
Well, luckily I'm still sipping on my umbongo. Jan, would you like an umbongo?
I'd love an umbongo. Oh. They drink it in the Congo, don't they?
I think they do. We've yet to see DR Congo at this competition so far, but hopefully during the hydration break, they will be holding their little boxes of umbongo, and then we'll know for sure.
There's no dispute in agreement. That's exactly what's going to happen because that's what they drink in the Congo.
Point of order, the games are not happening in the Congo, though. So people from the Congo might not drink umbongo because they're not in the Congo.
Yeah, but you know,
if
when
there were people
from
the Congo drinking umbongo in the Congo, then that would be a different matter. And also, do you have to be from the Congo to qualify for drinking umbongo in the Congo?
It's a lot like expats in Alicante, right, who come home to buy tins of beans with little sausages in them and then take it back so they don't have to eat the Spanish food. I think it's the same sort of thing.
I think those kit bags are going to be full of, just specifically for these hydration breaks.
Yes.
Okay, hydration breaks. We have to talk about them. Fox are loving them because they're putting 3 minutes of adverts on during them, and sometimes those adverts are still playing when they actually come back. Players are hanging around waiting for the 3 minutes to be up, and it's just awful. It's great if you need a wee, like us, if you're old, yeah. You've been drinking beer. Yeah, 3 minute break in the middle of a half.
It's quite handy, yeah.
It's very handy. However, bad thing, isn't it, Terry? It's bad.
Yeah, no, it is genuinely a bad thing. I remember, was it the Switzerland-Qatar game in which there was one game when they were ready to come back and they'd been waiting, I want to say for as much as a minute, but maybe it was 30 seconds. And they were standing there waiting for the kickoff. And there was Whitney Houston belting out over the PA. And I thought, are they waiting for the Whitney song to end before they go out? Because out of, you know, tribute and honour to Whitney, who obviously is an absolute icon. And maybe they just think it's rude to just like kick the game off while Whitney's still playing. That was ridiculous. But what we have also seen, however, we've seen the flow of a football match being severely interrupted by these drinks breaks. And I think that that is actually quite serious. Because that's, you know, we're not supposed to have four quarters in a game. Yeah. And if we do have four quarters in the game, then obviously at that point, the coaches might have to say, well, actually, we need to think about what we do, coping strategies for what happens after the break. And that's obviously not happening at this point. The one that sticks in the mind most is the Germany-Curaçao game. Curaçao just scored. It looked like they're not a bad team, Curaçao, but they are a sort of like mid-table Eredivisie side. So there's no reason why they couldn't have got back into this game, but it looked like that kind of got derailed after that first quarter. And I think that that needs to be looked at with the utmost seriousness. And I am worried that this might become a thing.
Yeah, it does look like a thing, doesn't it, Jan? It looks like everyone's getting nicely comfortable with a 3 minute break. They don't even swap ends. I suppose that would nail it down, would it? That would say, yeah, this is actually four quarters now. So they say, oh, no, it can't be a quarter. We haven't swapped ends. Look, it's just a little break, 3 minutes. What's the deal? Chill, come on. Enjoy your umbongo, come on.
Yeah, get some umbongo down you, like they do in the Congo.
Yes.
You say chill there because in some of these stadiums, they've got air conditioning and
they're
roofs.
They're indoors. Mm.
And so it's probably freezing in there.
Yeah.
And so you don't need to stop for a hydration break or to cool yourself down because probably in playing in 18, 20 degrees and it's fine. In fact, some of the games where they didn't have a roof or air conditioning and the temperature was like 23 degrees, they probably didn't need a hydration break then anyway. And when someone goes down, you know, inevitably someone's going to be injured and require a little bit of treatment. In most football matches, players run to the touchline and get a drink anyway. So I don't understand why they would need that. Unless, of course, they're trying to make some money out of it. You mentioned the advertising earlier on Fox. But I did see Hydration Break pop up on the scoreboards on the big screens with a whatever that disgusting drink they drink in America is, Powerade, something like that, Gatorade, whatever it was. It was sponsored by one of those two. And the strange thing is that the players are stopping for a drink that's been provided for them, but the punters that go into the ground have to leave their drinks outside because they're not allowed to bring water in because they have to buy the water inside of the ground. So hydration is all over this World Cup, and so is rampant capitalism, and I think that's why it's all happening.
Yes, yes. But it's not good for the game, though, is it? Because, no. Because yeah, it is changing the game. And, yeah, that Germany-Curaçao game was a perfect case in point because not only had they just scored, they just had a decent attack as well. And they were looking good. And Germany did change their shape. And they never looked back. And, yeah, obviously, they scored plenty of goals after that first quarter.
If you want to have a conversation about having four quarters in football matches, then let's have that conversation.
Yeah.
But let's not sneak it in by the back door. If you want to sort of like sit down and say, okay, well, look, this is the commercial reasons for doing it now. We think this is a good idea. We'll bring in additional revenue. We think it's a good idea and we should do it. Let's have that conversation, have an argument about it and make a decision. Let's not say, well, actually, we must have a hydration break because it's just so warm because we chose to take a World Cup in the middle of summer to somewhere with the most bonkers climate ever and keep it in the summer rather than, say, moving it to winter, which they could have done, like they did with Qatar. I said, oh, so therefore, for the well-being of the players and for the welfare and the health of the players, they have to have hydration breaks. I can get on board with all of those things, absolutely. Although, as I say, I think that you can still have mandatory hydration breaks, but you could just leave it to the referees and the officials to have a conversation with the players as to when those breaks happen. I think all of those things can be done amongst grown-ups making that kind of decision. By implementing there, you are clearly saying, right, there's a commercial opportunity here for sponsors and broadcasters. And once it's in, there'll be encouragement. I'm certain Fox will share some of their numbers with FIFA and say, oh, by the way. So it would be great for the Club World Cup, wherever that is, if ever that happens, if you could do that again. And then maybe even have a chat with UEFA and say, oh, well, for the Euros and then the Champions League. And the next thing you know, it's happening. But if you want to do that, then let's talk about that. But let's not just do it by subterfuge, by saying that we're looking after the player's health by doing this. That's just bullshit. This was entirely commercial and it stinks, frankly.
So Germany got off to a great start anyway with that stonking win. Great for the goal difference. But the other teams in their group had a much closer game, Ivory Coast and Ecuador, and it is probably the one game that I didn't watch live that I really wish I had. That was 0-0 for most of the game, and former Sunderland player Amad Diallo scored the winner in the 90th minute.
Yes, it was great to see, Graham. As soon as he put it in, I thought to myself, look, if there was ever an outside chance of him coming back to Sunderland, that's now just gone because he scored in a World Cup. So it's not going to happen. I'm pleased for him because he's a great guy and a great player. That looked like a really, really good game. Again, I watched the 8-minute highlights because I can't stay up that late or early or whenever it was. But there was a lot going on in that game.
The woodwork was hit three times, I think, in that game, at least.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, the woodwork did a lot of heavy lifting there. Yeah, it's again, you know, I know that you can't schedule a World Cup around what a European wants to watch, but it's things like that. You kind of miss out on games that are real gems that kind of on paper probably don't look like that they're going to be, but that seemed like a pretty good one. I wish I'd had the fortitude to be able to stay up and watch that one.
I suppose the biggest shock so far in this tournament, would it be Switzerland not beating Qatar, or is it Australia beating Turkey 2-0? Terry, what would you think? Or have you got a different shock result so far?
No, I think that for me, the shock is Switzerland-Qatar. I watched that game and Switzerland dominated that game. And the football gods punished them for not scoring their second goal. Qatar offered absolutely nothing until that moment when they scored. And so, I think for me, that's possibly the bigger shock, I suppose. But Australia-Turkey feels like a shock, although actually I think there's only four or five places between them in the rankings, as it happens. But Australia really talking down their chances going into this tournament and not really thinking, even by their own standards of hyping themselves up for a tournament, they weren't fancying their chances. And this one, I think, came as a big surprise. Patrick Beech, very much man of the match in that one. Tremendous moment. Great that an A-League goalkeeper comes into the World Cup and beats a senior team like Turkey. Turkey really did have an awful lot of the possession there. 30 shots on goal, 8 shots on target. It says here on the stats on my phone. So I think that they can probably feel that they had a bit of an off day. That is a shock, but it isn't a shock at the same time, I suppose. Maybe we kind of fell for Australia's shtick.
Well, I think the biggest shock has just happened, actually. I've just seen the final score come through. It's finished 0-0 between Spain and Cape Verde. Cape Verde were looking amazing. Yeah, Spain had 27 shots in that game. Cape Verde, 1 shot on target. 74% to 26% possession. Oh!
And expected goals are 2.2 for Spain, which when you compare that to Turkey's, which was like less than 1.5,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I think they took a load of those shots were from outside the area. And yeah, Switzerland had an XG of over 3 in their game.
Yeah, that was insane. Yeah. Yeah, that was shocking. That was really, really poor.
This is great. This doesn't feel like a mix-up tournament, but I think you've got 3 results there. Yes, I appreciate that Australia's result wasn't that much of a shock when you consider, but USA's performance against Paraguay as well. So there's actually some performances here that are, I wouldn't say desperately surprising, but they give you hope for the whole of the tournament because it does feel like this tournament's a lot closer than perhaps people would have anticipated.
Paraguay were awful, though.
Yeah, they were. They honked.
They were terrible.
Absolutely honked. But they've been really good.
Yeah.
All right, they came in 6th, I think, in their qualifying, but whoever was 2nd was only 1 point above them. So all of those teams were on 28, 29 points in that full table in CONMEBOL. And I think they only were that far down because they lost their opening game against Venezuela, and then they sacked their manager, got new manager, and under this new manager they've been fantastic, and yet they absolutely honked. I think they turned up, they weren't ready for FIFA refereeing. I think there was a lot of that there, as was seen in actually perhaps the most interesting decision that was made in there. Danny McKayley was the referee. Obviously European viewers will know him because he turned up quite a lot in the Champions League. But, yeah, overturned a yellow card for Tim Ream and then showed it to Miguel Almiron under advisement of VAR. Terry, what was your take on that whole incident?
That is obviously a new one for us because usually it's red card events that VAR intervenes on, and not yellow card, and not even, in fact, double yellows, in fact, which lead to a red, unless I'm mistaken about that. But certainly, so that surprised me. And then... then I found out that the reason was that it was a new addition to the laws for this World Cup about mistaken identity.
Yes.
Which, of course, this wasn't.
Yeah. It was just re-refereeing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You got that completely wrong. Re-referee it and do it again.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I suppose the thing is that what kind of honks about it is it's the host nation is the beneficiary, which does kind of honk. You don't like to see that. You accept the host nation should have a degree of home advantage. Otherwise, what's the point in paying all that money to host a World Cup if you're not going to have the benefit of the doubt from the referee? I mean, come on, guys. But that seemed a little bit, unfortunate, shall we say. I don't know what the fallout from that has been, but you don't want to see that again. Yeah, that just feels like it was a kind of a unfortunate schoolboy error. And Miguel Almiron, of course, serves him right for going down like a sack of potatoes. But, I mean, I'm not suggesting he doesn't deserve the booking, but...
No. Yeah, and it was one of those kind of things where, justice was served, but this isn't the way that the rules are, is it? This isn't... Even with your newfangled rules, you've really stretched the interpretation there of mistaken identity to come up with this. I think the whole thing behind it was going back about 10 years to, I think, the Euro final in 2016 when Lauren Koscielny was given a handball yellow card when it was the opponent that made the handball. And I think that's what it's looking at. But this is not mistaken identity of the incident. This is just getting the decision wrong, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it as you said, it's just re-refereeing the game in the game. And we just don't need VAR getting involved any more than it already does because, it's how long before players are arguing about, you need to go to VAR, they draw the little screen, because I'm not happy about the yellow card. I mean, yellow card's something that happened so much now. So I don't think that's a welcome addition to the game at all.
VAR has had a couple of, teething problems. They've ramped up a lot of the stuff on there. All the players, when they were doing their little intro videos, doing their poses, but they also had their body scanned. All of them have had their body scanned for the semi-automated offside. And in that Qatar-Switzerland game, Switzerland won a penalty that, for the life of us, everyone looking at it thought, no, that player's offside. And they couldn't come up with a semi-automated animation for it because semi-automated offside wasn't working. Yes, the technical glitch had happened. No one got told that it wasn't working, but they couldn't come up with the little Veil of Doom animation for it. And so they put some lines on afterwards, very unsatisfactorily lines. They just look like drawn lines rather than any of the more high-tech ones that you see where they've actually put it into three-dimensional space. Now, this actually honked, and it looked awful. There was another one where all the semi-automated VAR went off, saying that a player was offside, and then the touch indicator inside the ball, this was in the Sweden match, indicated that Alexander Isak had actually got a toe to the ball and started a second phase of play. And it was only after the players had claimed that the semi-automated offside was overturned. Yeah, why the systems aren't linked, I don't know. That's probably because the software was thrown together at the last minute or hasn't been fully tested or is being developed by two separate companies who don't talk to each other because it's all proprietary information. That's the one I'm going for anyway.
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah, I think that's the one.
Yes. Yeah. Teething problems, Jan, do you think? I mean, you know, you've been in this environment. You know what rolling out new software is like. There's probably a patch on its way, isn't there?
Probably is, yes. Yeah. And then you'll lose all your contacts for a week when it comes down or whatever they have on VAR. If you're going to roll it out in a place where if it goes wrong, then it's a safe environment. But don't do it in the biggest show on earth. But it's all unnecessary, as we've said many times about all of VAR, and just adding more and more stuff to it is just making it more and more farcical, really. You know, having a sensor in the ball. There's a sensor in the ball.
Yes, yes, yes. There is a sensor in the ball.
And it made it the correct decision, and that's all that matters, I suppose, isn't it?
Yes.
I suppose
it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Well, it worked for Sweden, and Isak did get a toast to that. But they even had the little snickometer that they have in cricket pop up as well, just to show that there was in fact contact, which is great because we all like to be told what to do by technology. It's something I think we're going to have to get used to once Claude takes over the universe.
It's interesting, isn't it, Graham? Because, I mean, like, one thing, I mean, I'm not a techie person, but I've worked in tech companies and in support for tech companies. And the golden rule is you never roll out an update on a Friday afternoon. And this is the equivalent of rolling out updates on a Friday afternoon. Mm. And I'm only assuming because the tech companies just, like, badly need it to go out on the biggest possible stage because commercial reasons again. But, of course, they're leaving the prospect of their flies being undone, because if it turns out that it doesn't work properly or it's not being properly implemented, I mean, really, this kind of stuff is going to roll out at all. It needs to be rolled out beforehand and tested and shaken down, you know, like anything else, either in an under 20 tournament maybe, or in a league, you know, for a season. But the fact that they tend to do these kind of one, the law changes as well, you know, doing them in a live situation like a World Cup tournament, you're putting everyone under an awful lot of pressure. And of course, it's the referees who are the ones who are under the most pressure, because they're the ones who are supposed to actually make it work. They're supposed to operate the equipment and interpret the rules at the same time. And it's putting them under, you know, unnecessary pressure at what should be the greatest moment in their career. I don't think that's just me being old man-ish. I think that's genuinely wrong and really should be looked at and explored more. It's easy for guys like Gianni Infantino to tell us all to chill, sit there, you know, talking to dignitaries during the match, and, you know, while other people around him are trying to run around trying to figure all this stuff out while they're under the full spotlight and under the full glare. It's not good.
No.
And it tends to reflect badly on the officials when the technology goes wrong. because the officiating's all to pot because you're relying on this technology. The technology's got the issue, but the guy that's standing there saying after review and trying to do that in a second language in a stadium full of baying fans and players all around him. I mean, that's just you're putting people under unnecessary pressure because your systems are shit.
Mm.
You know, there's a human aspect to this as well. Terry's worked in support in tech businesses as a vice. So, when the tech goes wrong, your phones don't stop ringing. And you're the guy sitting there looking, feeling a bit stupid because, the tech doesn't work. And the referees are front and centre of that.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's fair on them.
No.
And the devs have all fucked off down the pub.
Of course they have. Happens every time that, Terry, actually.
It really does. It really does. I'm smiling, but actually I'm burning. My bladder and the piss in my bladder is boiling at the thought of it.
This is the problem, though, isn't it? This, because we're trying to introduce as much tech as possible now, and everyone wants to introduce some tech. And the whole thing about semi-automated VAR was partly developed by Adidas when they put the chip in the ball. And they were the only ones to do it. That's why it's been so slow to get it out into the major leagues in Europe, because not every major league in Europe has Adidas balls. When they brought semi-automated offside into the Premier League, it's a hybrid system. It's basically guessing where the football is and what's touching the football. It's not using the same system. And this is where we were saying about consistency amongst different leagues and about the games that have VAR and games that don't have VAR. Now you've got inconsistency in games with VAR because you've got different providers offering different decision levels, different microscopic analysis of the rules. It is ridiculous. Yeah, well, listeners, what we think about VAR anyway. And I don't think this is going to even itself out over the tournament. The only thing you get in FIFA tournaments is that they don't give you replays of anything that is slightly contentious. So anything that Sky would spend ages looking at, any call for handball that is waved away by VAR, you are not seeing those replays unless they're really, really innocuous. And that's because FIFA are in control of the replays. And whereas Sky want to have as much controversial talking points as possible around a game, FIFA do not. So that's why it looks like VAR is working perfectly. And even we can see with our own eyes that it's not working perfectly. Guys, I think we should wrap up this episode for now. Yes, I know we didn't talk about all the teams, but I think you've got a fair flavour of what's been going on in the opening stanza of this World Cup. We're about halfway through the first round of fixtures. England are still to play. By the time we come back, everyone will have played. And some teams will have played twice. We'll already be filling in our wall charts for the knockout round, I'm sure. What are you hoping for in the next week, Terry?
England to turn up and play well and beat Croatia is my, obviously, the thing that I want to see the most. I'm nervous about that game. I think everyone should be nervous about playing Croatia, particularly in the first game. But yeah, I mean, beyond that, I'm just looking forward to hopefully seeing as much chaos as possible. Even chaos to the point where not even FIFA can stop us from looking at him.
Jan?
I'm looking to see what France are going to be like in Argentina. And also a little bit about Portugal, of course. I'll be interested in what happens with England. France-Senegal is an interesting one. That's the game that they're playing tomorrow. Senegal, of course, started France's defence of their World Cup in 2002. Wouldn't it? They lost that game and France went on not to get out of the group. So I think that might be quite an interesting one with a bit of needle about that one. So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Great. Well, yes, as I said, we'll be back next week with loads more football has been played. But I hope that's given you a little flavour of what we think of the first few days of the tournament. And largely, I think we'll just go back, break out some Mbongo, sit down and watch Belgium versus Egypt this evening, yeah? But that's all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
This is it. VAR changes. To corners, the VAR will make sure that the corner has been correctly awarded, but they won't do the same for goal kicks, which should be corners.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So if they award a goal kick and it should be a corner, they'll go, sorry.
If the referee gives it as a corner...
The referee gives it...
They're not going to overrule it to be a goal kick. Is that right?
VAR will make sure that a corner has been correctly awarded, but they won't do the same for goal kicks, which should have been corners.
Right,
so
okay.
How, doesn't that...
So I guess that's kind of... You know,
so if you win a corner when it should have been a goal kick, it will give a goal kick. But if you win a goal kick when it should have been a corner, they'll stick with the goal kick.
Right. Yeah.
That's how that I read
so
that.
So it, what it's saying is it checks for corners, but it doesn't check for goal kicks.
But aren't you doing... But yeah.
I don't know.
I'm still not straight in my head about how that even works.
Yeah.